Tabak ist böse, denn darin ist Nikotin und Nikotin verursacht Krebs. Das ist mal so eine ganz vereinfachte Sicht auf die Dinge. Ian Baldwin ist Professor am Max-Planck-Institut für chemische Ökologie in Jena. Und er kann die Tabakpflanze in all ihrer Komplexität, man möchte fast sagen Intelligenz, erklären. Baldwin ist US-Amerikaner, deshalb haben wir dieses Gespräch auf Englisch geführt. Ich habe ihn gefragt, welche intelligenten Eigenschaften er denn der Tabakpflanze so zuschreibt. Which intelligent features does the tobacco plant have?
These features have to do with the way in which a plant, this particular plant, has dealt with insect attackers that have broken through its main defense compounds. And the defense compound, of course, is nicotine, as you mentioned earlier. Normally, when something that's not adapted to nicotine chews on a tobacco plant, it increases the production of nicotine dramatically and makes the leaves even more poisonous than they were before. Now, it turns out that when you use a toxin against an insect, in not too long of a time, that insect will probably evolve resistance to that toxin. And this happened to the tobacco plant also probably about a million years ago. That insects that live on this plant evolve the ability to detoxify and even use that nicotine for their own defenses. So what the tobacco plant does when it's attacked by these specialist insects that have evolved resistance to nicotine, they first recognize that the attack is from them, and then they launch a 5-stage defense response against these resistant insects. And these 5 stages are just brilliant.
How?
Well, they involve not just the production of more toxic chemicals, but the other thing it does is produce a group of proteins which are not toxins in themselves, but they interfere with digestion. Because after all, what a caterpillar wants to do is to turn plant material into caterpillar material, and it does that by digesting leaves. And so these are special proteins that interfere with the enzymes that the caterpillar uses in its stomach to be able to digest leaves. But then there's another layer, and these are, again, all activated by the particular spit compounds in the caterpillar's secretions in its mouth that the plant uses to recognize that it's attacked from this type of caterpillar and not another type of caterpillar. And this third layer involves calling in the predators of the caterpillars. The plant begins soon after attack to produce volatile bouquet, just like a perfume that's full of different structures, but some of those structures are information molecules that basically tell the predator community of those caterpillars that there's a caterpillar over here in this plant attacking it. And so what the plant is doing is calling in the enemies of the plant. And this is a very inexpensive way of dealing with your predators. You simply just call in your enemy's predators. And it does that, again, with very interesting chemical signals that are all in that very complicated volatile bouquet.
And that's, okay. You've been quoted as saying that the tobacco plant is able to call for help. So that's this call for help, yes?
Right. That's the call for help thing. Yeah.
How does it know to do this?
So it knows it because it has these specific recognition molecules in the caterpillar spit that it uses to figure out that it's actually a caterpillar damaging it rather than, say, you know, a hailstorm or wind or a branch falling on it or, you know, some rabbit coming up and chewing on it. So it informs its responses intelligently.
Yeah.
I've only told you 3 layers, and I've got 2 more layers to go if you want to hear about it. Okay, so it has these different types of things that are basically direct defenses, the toxins and the digestibility reducers, and then it also has these indirect defenses that involve the calling for, you know, the police calling for the predators. But it has a 4th layer, which is a physiologic response, which involves well, I call it the Mahatma Gandhi response, because Mahatma Gandhi knew when to pick his fights. And the plant, in circumstances when there's too many caterpillars, changes the way that it moves the carbon around in its plants. So what a plant normally does when it's not attacked is to fix carbon dioxide and make sugars and then send those sugars up to grow new leaves. But when the plant recognizes these particular spit factors, it changes its source-sink relationship. So instead of sending the recently fixed carbon to new leaves, it sends it down to the roots. And caterpillars don't eat roots. And so the plant is basically bunkering away in a safe place its carbon until the caterpillar grows up and turns into a moth and flies away. And when it does that, the plant regrows, puts out new flowers, and starts over again. So that's the fourth layer.
What's now, the fifth?
The fifth is even weirder. The fifth is really, I think, the creme de la creme. So in order to understand the fifth, you have to understand where those caterpillars came from. And the caterpillars came because there was a mother moth that came along and ovoposited, laid an egg on it, and that egg then grew into a caterpillar. Now, that mother moth was attracted by the plant to pollinate the flowers. So here we have a situation which is pretty common in ecology, pretty common in the real world of human beings too, that the same genome has both a good guy in it, the pollinator, and a bad guy, the caterpillar. And it's pretty hard to fight against both the good guy and the bad guy, because if you kill the bad guy, you end up killing the good guy too. And the way the plant deals with this is that when there's too many caterpillars on a plant and it senses those spit factors, it normally produces a night-opening flower, which produces a particular type of scent which is attractive to the female moths. These female moths are superb pollinators. Now, the trouble with this pollinator is that, as with most pollinators, they drink that nectar and then they lay an egg. They drink a little more nectar and they lay another egg. So the more they get pollinated, also the more they get eggs put on them. And if those eggs are successful in growing up into little voracious caterpillars and start chewing
them,
there's trouble. And the plant solves the problem by switching to produce a completely different type of flower. This flower doesn't open up at night, does not produce the sweet scent that attracts the moth mothers in, but instead it opens up in the morning and only attracts hummingbirds. And hummingbirds don't lay caterpillar eggs. Hummingbirds lay hummingbird eggs, and hummingbirds are not predators on these plants. So it basically switches its sexual system to avoid the problem in the first place.
That all sounds really exceptional to me. Is the tobacco plant really exceptional, or is it just exceptionally easy to study?
Well, it's thanks to the long-term patient funding of the Max Planck Society, which I think is the most wonderful scientific society in the world, I've been able to put together a very complicated molecular toolbox to be able to understand what this native plant can do. And I would bet that if you could build a similar molecular toolbox for any plant that you walk out the door from your office there and look at, you would find very similar sorts of super interesting and intelligent strategies that the plants around you have evolved. And the reason why I think that's probably true is because it takes those sorts of responses, that sort of sophistication, to live in the real world. Our crop plants, which are wonderful at doing one or two particular things, like growing a great fruit or making a nice corn cob for us, don't survive any more than as long as we put them in our cornfields. As soon as we stop taking care of them, they disappear.
Ian Baldwin, Professor am Max-Planck-Institut für chemische Ökologie in Jena, über die Verteidigungsmechanismen der Tabakpflanze. Ganz clevere Pflanzen, wie er meint. Andere Eigenschaften, auch die schädlichen des Tabaks, haben wir zusammengetragen und sind zu finden auf dradiowissen.de.